Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Schmidt, Judge Werke, Judge Kirk, the Honorable John Schmidt presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. All right, we have three cases on for argument today in addition to two non-argument cases. Today is May 1st. You both know the procedures here, but just to go over them again, it's going to be recorded. There'll be an audio recording later. Please be sure to state your name and who you represent when you first get to the podium. The podium does adjust for height, so to the extent you want to raise it or lower it, it's right under the center. There's an up and down button right there. And I'll ask the marshal to call the first case.
Case A23-1661, Mohammed Shaban Sultan versus City of St. Paul.
All right, and appellants counsel, you'll have 15 minutes for your opening, 5 minutes for rebuttal, and you'll have 15 minutes for your argument too. So when you're ready, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. I believe this case has been briefed pretty well on both sides.
I'm sorry, counsel, can I just ask you to say your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
My name is Craig Vining, and I represent the realtor.
Thank you.
Mohammed Sultan. Wanted to state some facts that I think are important here. I think the legal positions I think are pretty well laid out, but there's factual issues here that I believe change the dynamic of how the city council ruled and. One of the most important issues has to do with the sublessee that was in the building, who admittedly brought in two bags of flavored tobacco.
But anyone could have said, "I brought it in. I brought it in. I brought it in." So we have a tribunal that makes a credibility determination. That is a very steep obstacle you have in support of your position. We're an error-correcting court. What do we do about a credibility finding that says, I don't believe them?
I understand. Thank you, Your Honor. I think what the difference is here is that Mr. Galloway, who is the sublessee, was present at the hearing. He did not or was not put on the stand to testify. I think that in order for the credibility component to be reached, the entire case had to do with possession of who had possession. The sublessee, sublessor issue was brought up at the lower court or at the ALJ hearing. The judge allowed 2 weeks for extra briefing to determine whether or not there was some case law or anything out there. Neither party was able to find anything specifically on point. My position is that in order to get to a credibility determination, there has to be some point of a decision on possession of who of the product. I don't think that the lower court addressed it, except as in my brief, just very very subtly saying it didn't make sense that he would have come in there, Mr. Galloway, and put a couple of bags of tobacco in front of the counter, not behind the counter for a sale. So my position and my client's position is that would have been a necessary decision for the court.
How clear was it to where this product was? I mean, I looked at the video and I can't make out anything there.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Really.
It is the city identifies it as being placed behind the cash register. The The location itself is set up where there's approximately the same type of distance from the podium here to the end of the table, and then there's an opening at that end of the table. According to the individual that actually placed it there, who did do a signed document that has been, I believe, very much misrepresented, set the product not behind the counter, but in that space area, which was 10, 15 feet from the podium. He did have a legal right to be in there. You know, he's got...
I thought the investigator said it was behind the counter.
That's what the investigator said. The client or the individual that actually brought the product in has stated on record that it was not behind the cash register. And I did bring that point up with the city council when we when I had my opportunity to speak with them. This was not a scenario where there were cigarettes for sale underneath the cash register, which was really where the original anonymous complaint came in, saying that somebody was selling cigarettes underneath the cash register. I can't get past the proposition that in order for her to make, to make a credibility determination, there has to be some type of finding of who that property actually belonged to. There's a presumption of sale argument that I made in my brief. Nobody defines what possession is. There's nothing in the statute or the code. So if we're falling under a presumptive penalty here, and possession is one of the penalties that are in play. There's no indication that there was a sale of anything. It's not defined in any part of the legislative code.
But the sublessee did not testify. Is that right?
Only via his document that is in the record, saying that, which he actually sent not to the court, but to Department of Health, who had come in. There were two investigative bodies in the facility simultaneously. The city investigator came in after the state investigator came in. The city investigator did not open the bags.
But here's my point to that question. So if it's just by the document, then how are we supposed to just believe that the location is where he said it was in the document, but then not give deference to the credibility findings that the administrative law judge made to say, I don't find this credible, and I have testimony from an inspector who says it's behind the counter?
Thank you, Your Honor. I understand the point. But he was actually at the hearing. For some reason, unbeknownst to me or my client, he was not either allowed to testify or didn't testify. And then it was kind of...
Why couldn't you have called him?
I wasn't there, and I'm a little bit. The attorney has kind of disappeared, so I don't have a good answer to you for that, because I certainly would have. There's a little bit of an unknown as to what actually happened.
You're kind of asking us to, by an incredible coincidence, that this fellow just happened to drop that off just a few moments before the inspection. Rather large leap, isn't it?
I think that I understand, Your Honor. Thank you. But I still believe that would be secondary to establishing possession. I think that there has to be some type of a definition within the code for it not to be vague. There's no presumption of sale scenario here. The only place possession comes into play in the statute itself, or in the code, excuse me, itself, is when the is under the presumptive penalty under 324.10b, I believe. That's the only time it says possession. Sale is defined, transfer is defined. So without, and I believe that the sublessor, sublessee issue had to have been addressed in order to establish compliance with the code itself.
What do you see happening as a result of this hearing? What is it that you're requesting us to do? Are you asking us to send it back for further hearing? Are you asking us to simply substitute our decision for the tribunal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would be asking to send it back and have the issue of the possession heard. There was a very brief 5-minute.
Did you have that opportunity, though? You submitted a letter from the sublessee. You had an opportunity to present testimony. What is different now? I mean, why are you getting a do-over?
Well, I don't believe that there was an adequate time frame for there to be. I was given 5 minutes to make my argument with regard to possession. I was interrupted during that time frame and was basically told that we're not going to change the ALJ decision. I just don't believe that there was an adequate factual finding.
In your briefing, you've also argued that the punitive aspects of the ordinance are void for vagueness. Can you expand on that? I mean, to me, I'm not sure what you are asserting is missing, because there is a matrix and it says first violation, 10-day suspension, and that's what your client got. Why is it vague?
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe it's vague because the legislative code itself does not define possession. I think it matters.
But as far as the punishment, let's
I'm sorry.
That argument, we're done with that argument. We'll look at that. But then you have a penalty that's imposed. You've argued that the penalty provisions of the St. Paul ordinance are vague.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is it that your client asserts that he didn't know?
The answer, I guess, that I have for you, Your Honor, is that we've got two individuals involved here, my client and the person that admittedly owned the product. Without there being...
So maybe what you're really arguing is that it was a harsh result?
It was a harsh result, but I'm not saying that is an argument that I'm making. My argument is that when it comes to both the financial penalty that came in play and this... You can't get to the financial penalty without making a decision about ownership and possession, and that's really where I'm trying to connect these dots together. I really don't have a whole lot more. I think that the briefing points it out. I don't believe that there was enough time to make the argument with the city council. I don't believe that the city council really took it, even thought about it. They just said, I mean, there's a audio on the city council hearing, and it was, we're not going to overturn the city or the ALJ. And again, no disrespect to the city council. I just don't think that the client should be subject to those penalties when there is an issue that's not fact-based, it's legal-based. They should have got into possession. I don't understand why there wasn't a more of a ruling on the sublessor, sublessee scenario, especially after they were given 2 weeks to brief it, and then in the order, the judge just basically laid it out that I'm not even going to reach that. I'm just going to make a credibility determination. I'm not even going to reach that. That's where I think that she had to make that in order to jump from credibility and not have any kind of idea of the legislative code issues that I've brought up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Counsel for respondent, when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lindsay Olson. I'm the city attorney for the city of St. Paul, representing the Department of Safety and Inspections this morning. I want to first address some of the things that the Relators Council said that you had questions on, and I want to turn the court's attention to the code in two sections. The first is in section 213, and that directs a licensee to, and any person who would read the code, to look at its entirety to effectuate the purpose of the code. And in addition, 310.14, which is generally about licenses, talks about the conduct of any clerk, employee, manager, agent of the licensee, or anyone working on behalf of the licensee, whether compensated or not, is their conduct on the premises, including areas adjacent, under the control of the licensee, will be considered and treated as the conduct of the licensee for purposes of adverse action under these code sections. In addition, I think it helps to clarify the understanding of possession that this court has had in other cases.
Can I ask you first about the code before you go to the possession?
Sure, sure.
So 310.14, under there, it doesn't matter whether it was the licensee or the sublessor who was selling the tobacco products. If it was the sublessor, the penalties would still apply because it's in the licensee's property.
Yes, Your Honor, that's okay. What the code is saying.
Thank you.
Two cases I think are helpful here for the court. Hard Times Cafe versus City of Minneapolis, that was a 2001 case that came before this court. And the complaints were a little bit different. The cafe had several licenses, and there was drug dealing and other illegal activity on the premises. And there was an issue. There were several owners. It was a co-op. And different types of activities, legal activities, illegal products were in and around that vicinity. And in that case, this court found that the issue was good cause, the definition of good cause, but the issue that the court was looking at was the question of whether or not that term was vague, as it wasn't defined under the Minneapolis Code. And this court found that the reading of the character of the entire circumstances, and Minneapolis also has a code provision similar to the 310.14, that looking at the fact that the licensee is responsible for what's happening on the premises, even where there were multiple owners, not every single one of them even had individual knowledge of what was occurring, the court found that it did affect the license and they were responsible for that activity occurring on the property. Cup Foods is also another case that is similar here, in that drugs were found all over that property in several undercover operations, and things were stuffed in shelves, and the idea that anything can be anywhere on the premises. The basic idea returns to the fact that the licensee is put on notice in the code by being given a license that they're responsible for those products on their property and what's occurring on that property.
You know, I think what Mr. Buning is suggesting is that he didn't have a crack at it with the city council, and the city council just, that's the arbitrary and capricious thing, just went ahead and took what the ALJ found. Is there any provisions for how much deference, I don't want to say deference, is there any provision for what the city council should do when they are the quasi-judicial decision maker versus having an ALJ here and consider the evidence? Is there any guidelines that are set out for that?
Well, Your Honor, thank you for the question. The standard of review for a quasi-judicial decision of the city is the arbitrary and capricious standard, and that is a very liberal standard in terms of giving discretion to the fact finder and also to the city council. In general, the fact finder is in the best opportunity to hear the facts and understand the totality of what was presented at the ALJ hearing. And generally, those ALJ hearings are opportunity to be heard. The council...
And I'm just trying to understand this because this is your business and your job and not mine. So when city council is considering this, do they just afford the litigants an opportunity to argue? Or I mean, they certainly don't present additional evidence. How does that roll out?
Sure. One of the code provisions that governs this talks about the fact that no new evidence is presented to city council when they hear the matter. All of the evidence, all of the facts are gathered in advance. Here they were gathered at the ALJ hearing, and they are presented with that report. In addition, as a relator stated, he did submit 25 pages of argument as well as spoke orally to them before they made that decision. Generally, when the council is considering, unless they're deviating from the recommendations and findings of that ALJ, there's not a requirement for them to lay out all of the individual bases because they're incorporating in the bases that they found to be substantial evidence from that ALJ hearing.
So even if he'd wanted to, he couldn't have produced Galloway, the sub lessee, to have him testify versus the letter evidence?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
So when the inspectors came in, you talked to the relator a little bit about the relative position and the premises. The ALJ, the fact that the items were on the premises, I think, is the bottom line. The ALJ judge also talked about, in addition to credibility was only one thing that she looked at. There were a lot of factual pieces that the inspectors testified to. One important fact was the proximity, but also the fact that there were over 52 types of products in these two plastic bags. The inspectors were there because they had received a report in Department of Safety and Inspections that unlicensed products, specifically flavored tobacco, with tax stamps either not affixed or scratched off, were being sold and behind the counter. The inspectors came in. They found plastic bags that contained a large amount, over 360 individual cigarettes, tobacco products, different types of tobacco products. those tobacco products either had tax stamps scratched off, or they didn't have tax stamps at all, or tax stamps of unknown origin, according to the investigator's testimony. And the ALJ found that those facts were very persuasive to her in terms of looking at the weight of the evidence. The testimony or the affidavit submitted by Mr. Galloway weighted against those facts, and there wasn't any specific reason why the bag was placed in a certain area versus another. He was working at the deli, said he was there to get a sandwich, and the ALJ found it defied logic and credulity that someone would come in with purportedly personal use products, place them in an area near where tobacco is being sold, and proceed to go to their area of the store to do something else. And so the credibility of Mr. Galloway was only one of the pieces that put together substantial evidence that the ALJ found in the case. This court will not retry facts or make credibility determinations, and that's been stated in several cases that have been before this court of like licensing cases, both tobacco, alcohol, other types of licenses. It's simply beyond the review that is in certiorari review. And the relator has the burden to show the arbitrariness of the council's actions. The city doesn't believe that he has met that burden. Much discretion is given to that ALJ as well as the council in making those determinations. So even if one or more determinations could have been met, the question is not whether there could have been another outcome, but that there is substantial evidence, which is normally defined as a scintilla, any. So there's way more than that here. You can see that in the ALJ's report. I won't repeat the facts that I've already stated, but she, you know, went into those pieces as well as the credibility determination. So the idea that this was carried on a credibility determination is incorrect.
Does the code allow any reopening in front of the council of the hearing, basically, that occurred from the ALJ?
No, Your Honor. It specifically states that the evidence before them is what they have. So neither the city nor the relator can bring new evidence or open up the record for more trial or testimony on any piece of that. So given that, you know, we don't believe that the relator has met his burden. We believe the ALJ's findings are supported by substantial evidence. The city requests that this court uphold the decision of the city council. Thank you.
Thank you. And counsel for realtor, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you would like to use it.
I don't believe I have anything else. I will stand on the briefing and thank Your Honor.
Great. Thank you both for the arguments today and for your briefs. We will get the case decided in the statutory time frame. So the case is submitted.